What I've always loved about style is the subjectivity of it, that it means different things to different people. It has more to do with the way we move through the world than it does with the clothes that we wear. Ultimately, it's about passion and attitude. I've spent decades working in fashion's trenches, seen the best and the worst of human style, and have had the chance to get up close and personal with some of the world's most iconic and intriguing characters. I'm Jeannie Becker, and this is Beyond Style Matters. On today's episode, Isaac Mizrahi.
Persistence is a part of my nature, you know, and also belief, you know, it starts with belief. If you really think that something is right or good, there isn't an option to stop.
I've had the chance to cozy up to all kinds of iconic designers in my day, but few have been as engaging and enigmatic as Isaac Mizrahi, a yeshiva boy turned New York fashion star who always struck me as a kind of tormented artiste, struggling each season to get it right and be understood. A multi-talented Renaissance man, he was obsessed with modern, glamorous women with lots of money and good taste, and fixated on dressing them simply, dramatically, luxuriously. I adored my heady conversations with Isaac. Unabashedly neurotic sometimes, but always witty and insightful. He saw himself as a problem solver, elevating the role of fashion designer to some kind of social therapist. The huge success of 1995's Unzipped, the documentary that exposed Isaac and his world in such an exciting and intimate way, catapulted him to superstardom, and he became a true cultural icon. But by 1999, his business softened and he put his career in high fashion to rest, cultivating other endeavors from hosting a talk show to creating a cartoon character to cabaret performing. But Isaac's inimitable fashion brand still lives on, with accessible clothing and accessory lines, and last year he launched a heart-swelling autobiography that reminded me of why I ever had such a major fashion crush on this guy in the first place. Hi, darling. What I find so inspiring about you, one of the many things, is that you are constantly putting yourself out there. And you've got this wonderful thing happening on your Instagram account, I am Isaac Mizrahi, where you do these weekly shows. Sometimes they're even more than weekly. I mean, you're talking about philanthropic endeavors, you're talking about recipes. I saw you bake this fabulously fattening, outrageous cake the other day. Are you really are adamant about communicating with your peeps out there?
Yes.
Why is that so important to you to keep dancing?
I don't know. You know, I'll tell you, everybody deals with things differently. But for me, I feel like unless I am on some kind of schedule, like if I don't wake up at a certain time, I probably won't get up. You know, it's like the greatest thing for me, the biggest blessing so far has been that I've been taking these bike rides every day, like hour-long bike rides every morning. It's like the first thing I do, you know? And I'm thinking about this, and it's like, you know, that's how I am no matter what. No matter what, I feel like you've got to develop some kind of, I don't know what, like a tradition or something, or a, it's not exactly a routine, because it's not really, the routine of it is that I actually do it every single day. But how about you, Jeannie Becker? Like, do you find what I'm, does this resonate with you at all?
Or
do you go like, you're crazy?
Listen, I understand what you're saying. I am not a creature of routine. I know you don't even like to call what you're doing routine, but it's almost like having a raison d'etre, though. What you're talking
That's
about,
right.
Like a reason for being, for getting out of bed and get. And I wish I could do that more. I'm not that disciplined. I like, especially during this period, I have taken the luxury of the time that I have, because I have much more time and I don't have to rush. And how many times in my life am I going to do this where I can just savor the moment a lot more than ever before? So I'm really waiting for the spirit to move me. And thankfully it does. So it's not like I'm just sitting around being a lazy bum.
Wow.
However, am I as driven as normal? No, I'm not. Are you?
Well, I have to say something, Jeannie, like what you're saying is, it's very influential. I mean, like I am thinking about that, and you know, I've been thinking thoughts along those lines, but hearing you say it makes me, you know, kind of take those thoughts very seriously. I mean, I do think the bicycle thing is a good thing because it's, I have to move my butt. If I don't move my butt, I'll be like giant. And I don't, that I really can't afford to do. But luxuriating in the time, I also feel like I am kind of allowing myself to do that. You know, it's a very subtle thing, right? It's like, I allow myself to like read for hours and like, you know, never, where do you ever get the time to read for hours? I watched like the entire like 7 seasons of the Mary Tyler Moore Show, you know, I'm in the middle of like the entire like 7 season of the Gilmore Girls, which I never watched. I mean, it's like a little crazy, you know, like when will you ever see the Gilmore Girls? Never, except in this time, you know?
Yeah. No, for me, listen, okay, true confessions here. Don't think I'm shallow, but I started
too
doing...
Too late.
Ha! You.
Me too. No, darling, you I have a little started, shallow thing. Well.
I started doing jigsaw puzzles as I found that it was very meditative and sometimes made the time go a little faster when I wanted it to if I was feeling anxious. And it's been a total roller coaster of emotions, right? That this whole period...
Yeah.
One minute you think, oh, they're going to find a vaccine and everything's going to be groovy again. And the next minute it's like, oh my God, the world's going to hell in a handbasket.
I know. Well, by the way, I mean, like, so weirdly, I think like jigsaw puzzles are finding a moment here because a lot of my friends are doing jigsaw puzzles. That's weird, right? Like, I'm not kidding. You know, like Lisa Santisi, you know, Lisa Santisi, the stylist, the one for the stylist. She's a very close friend of mine. You look at her Instagram posts. She has Instagram posts of like jigsaw puzzles.
Yeah. As long as you don't glue them to some kind of cardboard and hang them in your living room, I think they're
that's,
okay.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay. Now I don't want to get too nostalgic here, but I think that one of the wonderful things that I've been indulging in during these past few months is a healthy dose of nostalgia, thinking back to old times, old relationships, chapters of my life that, you know, you want to really sit and think about a little bit more than you usually have time for. And you always come to mind whenever I think of some of the best chapters of my life in those trenches of fashion, because you were one of the most inspiring and one of the most creative and visionary people, a true artiste, even though I know, okay, yeah, fashion, art, is it really the same? Some people would say it's one thing, has nothing to do with the other. But you, my dear, I think always approached your work as an artist, first and foremost. Do you, I don't know if you feel that way.
I do. I mean, you know, I was always one of the people who go like, oh, it's not an art form. If you don't sell it, you're in trouble. But unless, I mean, like deeply, 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 it is a form of art. That's why I've always been such a harsh critic of fashion, you know, because I think because I love it so much, you know, because I see it as this kind of major form of communication and major form of art, you know. And so sometimes like the imagery gets like out of control and I can't help myself. I just think it's like slightly misogynistic or very misogynistic or very, I don't know, misanthropic. I don't know. I have a real hard time with it. And especially now, like even designers that I love, and there are very few, I swear, like there are some designers I like what they do. I like what Marc Jacobs does. I like what Miuccia Prada does. I like these things, you know. And there's a new guy that I love called Ronald Vanderkemp or something. And his clothes are amazing. And they're all sustainable or something. I don't know. I mean, it's that, and that to me is like a fantastic, fantastic, you know, thing to devote yourself to, right? But just Ronald Vanderkemp, and I was looking at some of the slides from something, someone showed them to me, and the clothes are amazing, but I don't know, it's like, I just don't understand the relevance of it anymore, you know? I feel like I am too old to like really appreciate, you know, because in my day, it wasn't just this kind of like drag thing that's going on, you know? And by the way, what a relief that Mark and Miuccia are doing like plain polo shirts with like pleated skirts again, you know?
That's
a relief, you know? Exactly, yes. That's a big relief. And that's a smart, smart movement. But you see what I mean, darling. You see what I mean? Like these very, very outré kind of massive, like almost, it feels a lot like drag, and I adore drag. So I can only be thrilled that this is happening, you know? But for years and years now, I've been saying to myself, you know, where are you going dressed like that? You know, where are you going? And then the alternative to that, which is like a tight cocktail dress to the knee with your Spanx and your face all plastic and your hair all done, your beak face. I mean, I don't like that either. You know, I mean, like, listen, I think you're younger than me, right? And so like, I don't know if you can, like,
I think so you're like not slightly, younger than you.
Slightly. You. You're like 2 years younger than me. You're 50. How old are you?
68.
Don't tell me. What?
68 and
what?
Never felt better.
You're older than
you're
me?
You're a baby,
Jeannie.
So respect
Becker
your
is
elders.
Older than me. Excuse me. Woohoo! I'm so excited that somebody's older than me. No, but you know, I feel like because from like we look at clothes and we go like, you know, that's just not smart. It's beautiful, but it's easy to be beautiful. Everything's beauty is like, you know, this kind of outré, like beat down and hair and Spanx and corsetry. That's easy. That's the easy thing to do, you know? I mean, I guess it's physically difficult to sew a corset, but you know, that's like the first thing you do at Parsons, you learn to make a corset. You know what I'm saying, right? So it's like the hard thing is like respecting stuff and bringing it forward and making the insides of something, you know, modern and inventive, you know? And then the outside, I always thought, took care of itself, right? If you got the right model, if you got the right woman to wear the clothes, then that's most of it. That's 100% of it, you know?
Well, what about just having the right attitude? I mean, that ultimately is the key. And
yes,
if we have the confidence in ourselves,
yep,
and if we're comfortable in our own skin,
yep,
we're going to be able to pull off any look. I mean, the clothes are, they've always been secondary to me. Sorry, I know as a fashion journalist, maybe I shouldn't be saying that, but
no.
You know, it's not all about the clothes. It's about the way we move through the world in our clothes.
Here's the thing. It's like, this is heretical. This is absolutely heretical of me to say. I have been very critical of fashion because, like, you know, this whole thing that Galliano does, and then I think like McQueen did even better than Galliano, you know, this whole amazing construction. It's a fabulous thing, and it has probably been the most influential thing in the past 20 years of fashion, right? The past 25 years of fashion, but it's a construction, and I'm not I am not that person. I don't love encrusted, you know, corsets and constructed hair and tons, masses of masks of makeup. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
I'm not that person. So like, that has been very heretical. Like, I keep saying, yeah, it's great, but I don't like it. I'm sorry.
Not for me.
You know, I'm really sorry. I'm sorry to say that because I know there are so many young people who have influenced and set free, you know, like that entire generation, like McQueen set those people free. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
But it's just not my personal thing. I didn't like it, you know, like, and I feel like this wonderful thing is about to happen now where people are not, and I think it's going to be pushed by the COVID thing. You know, I remember when I was a kid, like listening to all these very smart people like Norell or something. I mean, I was a little too young to listen to Norell. He was dead by the time I got into it. But, you know, like Calvin, I worked for Calvin for a long time, and Halston, and, you know, the generation before me, Jeffrey Bean, who I absolutely
adore.
Absolutely. I mean,
yeah,
there was nothing better. There will never be anything better than Bean.
I agree. Absolutely.
Never. At the top. I don't
genius
care who comes along. It's the end,
I agree,
the end of it.
I'm there.
Totally. And the point is, like, you know, it was better to have a heel that high than a heel this high. Just better. You know, it was just better. It was better. It was smarter. A woman can run in a heel like, you know what I mean? Like, she's not prey. And no, I'm serious. It's like, you know, and when you look at like the politics of feminism, you know what I mean? I don't understand a shoe. I don't understand a shoe.
Yeah, but
and
still, come on, you can't deny that there's something downright sexy about a razor sharp stiletto.
Sure.
And you're right,
and you
precarious
know
on the sidewalk, but.
And listen, I leave it in the hands of Manolo Blahnik. Manolo Blahnik can do anything. He is a full saint. I think that is one of the great geniuses.
And a Manolo sweet Blahnik, part,
right?
Too. Nice guy.
Oh,
yeah.
A darling guy. And sexy.
Yeah. Yeah. interview I did with you maybe about 3 years ago, you actually told me something that I was reading old interviews with you knowing I was going to interview you again today. And you told me that you thought, I can't even say it because it sounds so outrageous, but obviously in context, it did make sense and you can explain it. You told me you thought Winston Churchill had, there was a something sexy about the way Churchill dressed. Okay, explain that, young man.
Well, I mean, that's a real exaggeration, obviously, you know, because I think if you back off that statement a little bit and you start with the statement that I can make completely with a bold face, and you will not probably not disagree with me. You know, usually people that are consciously being sexy are the least sexy people in the world, you know?
Agreed.
I'm sorry, but that's just what I think, you know? And because here's the thing, like, I don't necessarily look at the outsides of someone to communicate the sexiness or who they are. You know, the outside is a result of the inside. So if you play up all these elements that to this point have become defined as, you know, like not so smart, then eventually you just look not so smart. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like if you told Marilyn Monroe in the 1950s that bleached white hair and red lips and flattening out all of her features and cinching everything and pushing everything up, if you told her that was like dumb, she probably would have like smartened it up just a little bit, I think, you know, like, I don't know, there was something vulnerable about it in the case of Marilyn Monroe. And so that's what I found sexy, not the actual physical woman, Marilyn Monroe, mm-hmm. you know?
But getting back to Winston Churchill, I guess it was, you said something about the way he wore his little bow tie.
No, you know what it is? I keep saying this because English people, when I was a teenager and when I was in my 20s going to London a lot for the first time, you know, discovering London, discovering Savile Row, discovering, you know, Bond Street, all of that, World's End, et cetera, right? Like, even if you talk to Vivian Westwood at the time, you know, it's like there was something about the collection, the slow collection of stylish bits, you know, like, mm-hmm. and nothing exemplified that more than the way English men dressed. And I remember when I had my first suit made on Savile Row, it was a black suit. And the second suit I had was a tweed suit. And the guy said to me, you know, it's not a tweed suit from Savile Row until you get rained on 3 or 4 times. You know what I mean?
Yep.
So there's a shabbiness to it, you know? And I think that anyone who knows anything, like a new dress, I don't know, something you wear once, not as fabulous or sexy as something that you actually has been on your body, that lives on your body, that has some kind of, like, you know, what's the word? It gains a kind of gravitas because it's yours and you pull it on. And it's very hard to describe, but it's like, you know, when I think people are at their chicest is when they don't know it. You know, like if someone has to walk the dog and they pull on, you know, a sock and some little kitten heel sandal and mm-hmm. I don't know, like a little flouncy skirt, and they put on a scarf and glasses, like that's a style. That's style to me, you know? That's a person who's pulling things.
Where do you think then that in this post-COVID world, hopefully that we're going to see very soon,
yeah,
or right. Where do you think we're going to go with style and fashion? How is that going to affect the way that we dress, what we've just all been going through?
It's going to be some kind of a synthesis, right? Like, I think from here up, people are going to be thinking a lot about, because of, you know, I think a few things are going to change, you know, just socioeconomically. Like, it's going to become a real technological market, you know? Like, I don't think there's going to be a lot of in-person meetings anymore. I don't think there's going to be a lot of in-person shopping anymore, you know? I mean, there's going to be some things, and I feel like, you know, let me say this, I really mean this, because I am very, very invested in the performing arts these days. You know, I work in cabarets and I work at nightclubs, and that's my thing. And that's been the biggest drag for me, because all of those gigs have been canceled, you know, for 2 years, right? But I've been thinking lately that, like, if anything is going to happen, that's going to come back in a vengeance, because You can't do that over Zoom. You really can't. You can try and it's interesting and it's this and that, but there's nothing that's going to replace A, live theater, right? B, like beautifully shot movies, beautifully series that are shot.
Live music, live music. How much are we craving that?
Oh my God.
Yeah, I know. I know.
But you see what I mean. So like, so let's talk about that. And then how will fashion be a part of that? You know, I feel like how good we've gotten over the past 20 years at this kind of construction. I think an actual poll, like the polls, they'll be like this kind of really down. Like, I think for the most part, people are going to get used to this kind of, it's almost going to be like ancient Rome or something, where you're going to be in a toga or something very loose or very, very comfortable and stretchy, or you're going to be made up and done up from here. You know what
I'm
saying?
From the waist up. Yeah,
right? Like Jane
from
like
the
Jane
bus
Jetson,
line up.
Right. Jane Jetson mask.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So it's going to be mask or the opposite of mask. That's
wow. And do you find that because you're still putting clothes out into the world, you have an incredible relationship with women that you've nurtured
yes.
for so many years now. And once you said that was one of the most important things to you, this contact that you have with women.
Well, yes.
How are you thinking about how you want to dress them? I mean, because that was such a, you know, I think of all those brilliant shows that you gave us over the years. Isaac, taking fashion to such new places in such a modern way and giving us such a perspective on ourselves, in a sense, and who we wanted to be as modern women. Right. What about now? How are you addressing your customer?
Well, I think like, you know, that edge that I was kind of exploring in those days, right? It had to do with the world I lived in, you know? I loved going out at night. I loved it. I love going to dinner now. I love going to the theater now. I love going to the ballet, but I don't think I'm going to ever go to like a nightclub ever again. I mean, like, you know, a disco. Nightclub is a different thing. I mean, I work in nightclubs, but you see what I mean. I probably won't go to like, you know, the tunnel. I won't, you know, yeah. I probably won't do that. And that was anyway, where you saw how people put themselves together. You know, when I was a kid, if you went to Studio 54 or you went to Xenon or you went to the Palladium later or the Mud Club or whatever it was, you know, area, it was a scene and you got in it. You were in it and you could see and you knew it was coming and you knew it was over. You know what I mean? And I felt like I was better equipped and even interested. I'm not really interested in that anymore. I'm sorry. I'm just not. I'm not that interested in saying like, here's what length is exactly the length. And boy, is it about that shoe. And boy, is it not about that shoe. I'm not that interested. So like, I feel like it's a young person's game. Fashion is a fashion. But I mean, I continue to do these like really easy kind of, I call it like, you know, not rocket science. I make like t-shirts and cashmere sweaters and like, cute little pants and things for QVC that people adore and they're made amazingly well and everything is like, you know, $40.
Crazy. And for
you
know, TSC, which we, you know, we love TSC, you on TSC yes, too.
Right.
And the whole idea of shopping on TV, something that you were hip to for such a long time
yeah.
and still understand
yes.
that, yes, I mean, we can't get out there as much. Wow, what a great way to have some kind of a personal interaction while you're going through the shopping experience.
Yes.
Your book, I Am a Memoir, mm-hmm. was very profound. That came out last year. Absolutely
you.
Adored it. For anyone that
Thank
hasn't
you.
Read it yet, I strongly urge you to read it because it's about making it against all odds. It's about a very magical pursuit of happiness, the pursuit of happiness. And at the very beginning, Susan Sontag, who has always been a great heroine, I'm sure, of yours and for so many of us, start the book off with a quote, just wait till now becomes then and see how happy we were. Because when we start
yeah.
to reflect on the past, you start to realize, wow, there was some real, you know, authentic, happy times that we just sort of glided over.
I know.
You
know
maybe we
I know.
Didn't savor it enough.
I don't know how much we're meant to savor. I feel like, you know, the speed at which you move sometimes doesn't allow exactly for savoring. And that's what was great about life, at least my life. You know, like, I wish I could describe to people, you know, Veronica Webb, my friend, she's a supermodel.
Brilliant.
And she has this line, she's a brilliant girl. I mean, she's a great writer, she's a great thinker, she's just beautiful in every way. And she's really close. And she has this line, which is such a great line. She says, "Darling, we were raised in Versailles," you know? And it's kind of true. Like, Jeannie, I know that you know what I'm talking about. Like, in our heyday, like, they just don't understand the kind of money and the kind of development and, you know, the Concord to, you know what I'm saying? It was like, it wasn't, we had to take the Concord because we were so rushed.
It was
heated. I mean, it was heated. It was
crazy.
Age
of excess. It's funny. I was talking to Franca Sozzani's son about that, who did that beautiful film about her, Franca Sozzani film.
I didn't see it. I should see it. I love it.
Italian Vogue. Yeah, you should see it. It's on Netflix. And his name is Francesco Carazzoni. And I asked him how the role of fashion had changed for his younger generation. And he said that it's less fun in a way because there's less money. So there's less freedom to do certain things.
Totally.
The economy now, has that just really squashed it all? I mean, you don't want to paint a grim picture.
I mean, I don't know. I feel like, you know, I feel as though, you know, this the whole demise of fashion editorial is, I think, what I mourn the most. It really is about, you know, like people thinking about fashion, motivating it by writing about it, by shooting it. And when I was a kid, it was rewritten and reshot so often and rethought to such a crazy refined state. You know, if you picked up those Vogues and those Bazaars and those W's, I mean, it was an amazing level of excellence, not just visually, because visually it's, I mean, probably gotten better, but there was an intellect to it, you know, like the intellect, because of this excess of money, there was a cushion. People could go like, yeah, wait a second, I'm thinking about it. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And by the way, if you can't in 1986, you can't, you know, change the color of a lip, you know, by pressing a button on a screen. You have to reshoot the whole fucking thing. So, I mean, it was more like, it was more about reshoots than it was about, you know, shooting, right?
Yeah.
I remember that. It was like, when I would lend a dress, I'd say, oh, good, well, it's back. And they're like, well, they need it back because they're reshooting. And it was like, okay, it was a regular basis.
No.
They reshot everything. And that meant flying a bunch of people, models, stylists, back to Venice.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Or back to Miami or whatever. So, I mean, it was a bigger, it was a bigger, better subject. It just was, I'm sorry.
Yeah.
And now everybody's on a budget. And now there's no such thing. I mean, here's another example of where I really feel sorry for, like, at least New York designers. Like, I had a huge sample room. I had a factory, darling, of people that I taught how to sew and who taught me how to sew and who taught me how to make clothes and I taught them how to make clothes.
Yeah.
So it was like this very wonderful little dialogue going on, you know? And without that, I'm at a loss. I mean, to send a bunch of sketches to, you know, another country to get made.
Well,
and then you come back and you
I
have
know.
These samples that are flat, don't fit anybody, and you have to show them.
All has not been totally rosy in your being.
No.
You've had some really tough times for sure. What is it that's made you be as persistent as you are?
That's such a good question. I think, darling, I think it's genetic or something. I think it's my astrological chart or something. Persistence is a part of my nature, you know. Because also belief, you know, it starts with belief. If you really think that something is right or good, you know, like there isn't an option to stop before you actually kind of live out the vision, you know, like you're committed to something, whether or not. So you just keep going and going and going, and it doesn't matter. And, you know, like, Jeannie, here's the thing. I never cared that much about money. I'm not a money person. You know, I probably should be much richer than I am. I think, like, if I had like really good business partners, I probably would have been like so rich, you know. I probably would have been Donatella Versace if I had good business partner, right?
Not blonde enough.
No, exactly. you know, so like the money thing, I feel like that's part of it too. You know, like sometimes if you're following money, you don't persist. You go like, all right, well, that's mm-hmm. over. This is what I'm doing now. And I could never live that way. You know, I could never live that way. So persistence to me, you have to keep like, keep at it, you know, because, and there shouldn't be a problem, because if you feel passionate about something, there's nothing can stop you. Nothing.
Bravo. Bravo, darling. Isaac, thank you for being you. I could talk to you forever.
Me too. I really adore you.
You have lightened up my life for many years, and you continue to light up my life. I mean, what can I tell you? I've just, what a smile you put on my face. Just love you to pieces, darling.
Me too. I love you too.
Thanks for listening. You can catch me Thursday evenings on TSC's Style Matters, and new episodes of Beyond Style Matters will be coming at you each and every week. Till next time, I'm Jeannie Becker.